You want to do some podcasting, Jay?
Oh my God, I thought you would never ask.
King Arthur loved cuckolds. The dude was bigger than a giant.
Solid. That's a thing I need to know.
Yeah.
I am the god of this forest, and I will flex.
Welcome to My Medieval Mayhem, the podcast where we discuss medieval literature, history, and medievalism. I'm Marcel Losada, resident medieval scholar and Knight of Gondor. And with me, as always, is my brother, Jan Michael Losada, writer of Rohan and lover of stories.
You know, I didn't realize I had the privilege of being one of the writers, but wow, you know, I can roll with this. I can definitely roll with this.
I've seen you on a horse.
Yeah,
I've seen a picture of you on a horse.
Yeah, exactly. Yep. And I didn't trust him the whole time. Maybe I would be better in Gondor.
Do you want to switch?
Can I be a dwarf?
Whatever you want.
Yeah,
Yeah.
Great, great.
I'll put it into the next opening. So
fantastic.
There we go. Jan, we are now on the sixth and final part of Percival, the story of the Grail, as translated by Nigel Bryant. Great story. We love it.
I can't wait to bury this guy. Strong predictions. Percival's going to kill King Arthur and take over the Knights of the Round Table.
Yep. That's your preferred ending.
That's the ending I'm like low key hoping for. I know it's going to be some bonkers that I couldn't even like some bonkers outcome that I couldn't fathom happening, you know?
Interesting. Yeah. Won't ruin a thing. So for this last part, Jan, instead of having you summarize the story so far, which if you want a summary, just listen to the previous episodes. Instead of that, Jan, I'm going to ask you what you've taken away from this story so far.
Oh, phew. What have I taken away from this story so far?
It is a wealth of morals and stories. So
that
yeah, go for it.
Knights are they really respecting other knights.
Okay.
That the medieval idea of geography is confusing and vacuous at best. That a lot of the dynamics between men and women are less than chill in the period of time, and that storytelling has changed dramatically because all the most violent parts aren't mentioned, and that I don't know, honor seems to be a big tableau here, a big like, you know, part of the code of being a knight.
Yeah. Those are really good takeaways, man. And I don't want to add to it because I do want to get straight to the story, right?
Sure.
To
Get
just
cracked.
Put this guy down because it will be a little bit of work. We got some places to go to wrap this up in a nice, neat bow.
Yeah, because we're not even following Percival. We're further away from the Grail than we have been since like the last episode. So, yeah.
good job. Yeah. And so just some real quick broad strokes. We are following Gawain, Gawain, however you want. He is horseless. He was brought on a pony and brought to a place where he was supposed to die, but he's been beating the crap out of everybody. There's a bunch of ladies in a castle nearby and this boat that goes back and forth. There's some lady that was making fun of him that kind of drove him to this point. He's had his horse stolen, he got it back. Kind of, he knocked out the knight that had his horse. So that's where we're picking back up, kind of. And there's a girl. So here we go. While he was thinking about the girl, he saw a skiff coming from the castle. And a skiff is just a small boat, my friend.
Okay.
Was guided.
I'm quasi-familiar with skiffs of the now, so.
Yeah, they still exist. Yay, the skiff. And so they were guided by a pilot. And when the pilot reached the bank, he said, Sir, I bring you greetings from the girls yonder, and they send you word not to withhold my rightful possession. Return it to me if you will. And for this, he means the horse, his horse, right? And Sir Gawain replied, God bless you all, the company of girls. You'll never lose anything on my account, which you could claim to be yours by right. I have no wish to wrong you. What is it you want from me?
Okay.
Sir, said the man, I saw you topple a knight here whose horse I should rightfully have. Unless you mean to do me wrong, you ought to hand that horse to me. And Gawain said, it would be a great hardship for me, friend, to give up what you say is yours, for I'd have to continue on foot.
Yeah, I'm with Gawain on this one. What? Yeah. Who says it's your horse?
Right. Shame upon you, knight. Those girls, and there was a ton of girls looking out from the windows, if you remember, yes, at this place. Yes. Yeah, anyway. Those girls will think you most disloyal and wicked now, if you won't return what's mine by right.
For yeah, that's, when, he's not, like, stating any facts about, he's just saying you're going to be embarrassed. All the pretty girls are going to judge you.
Yeah. For whenever a knight has been unhorsed on this bank, and I've known of it, I've never failed to have his mount. And if I didn't get the horse, I didn't fail to get the knight. So he's saying, like, I get some kind of bounty, I guess, right?
Okay.
And Sir Gawain said, I'll not refuse you the knight, my friend. Take him. I give him to you. In faith, sir, said the pilot, that's no gift. I think you'd have trouble taking him yourself if he decided to defend himself against you. But if you've got it in you, go and capture him and bring him to me, and you can keep what's rightfully mine, referring to the horse, right? So he's saying, go get the knight. Bring me the knight.
Who died and made him captain of the horses?
Like, man, why? He's the pilot, dude. He's got the boat, I guess.
All right.
Friend, if I dismount, this is Gawain, right? If I dismount and go on foot, can I trust you to keep my horse in good faith?
No, you can't. He wants the horse.
Certainly, he said. I'll keep him for you faithfully and gladly give him back to you. I'll never wrong you in any way as long as I live. I promise and swear.
Cool. All right.
I'll trust you then, said Sir Gawain, on your promise and your word. And so he climbed from his horse and entrusted it to him. And the pilot took it, saying that he would guard it faithfully. Then Sir Gawain sent out, sword drawn, towards the knight, who had no need of further trouble, for he was so badly wounded in the side that he had lost a good deal of blood. Sir Gawain came up to him. Sir, said the knight in great difficulty, I can't hide it. I've had such a grievous wound that I cannot do without receiving worse. I've lost a gallon of blood.
Dang, you ain't looking so hot there.
I'm pretty sure there's not much left.
Yeah, like,
I'm not a
sure.
Doctor, but it's probably getting serious at that point, right?
Yeah, he's looking white for sure. He's worse for the wear.
Get up then, said Sir Gawain. And the knight struggled up, and Sir Gawain led him back to the pilot, who thanked him deeply. Then Gawain asked him to tell him about the girl he had led there, if he had any information about where she had gone. And the pilot replied, sir, forget about her, wherever she may have gone, for she's not a girl. No, she's worse than Satan, for on this bank she's caused many a knight to be beheaded. If you'll take my advice, you'll come now and take such lodging as I can offer, for it's no good staying here on this riverbank. It's a wild place and full of great marvels.
Okay. So he's giving him the dying knight, mm-hmm. and he's offering him passage to a place.
Yep.
Okay. That's full of
his
great
castle.
Marvels.
Yeah.
Great.
Yeah, well, this place, out of this place.
Yeah, sure.
This place is a wild place and full of great marvels. And marvels, it's like the root is like wonderful or wondrous or full of wonder. And I'm not entirely sure the connotations are all that positive, you know, like,
wow,
like
100%
positive.
Huh. Yeah. Whereas I would automatically think wonderful means rad, like a place that's wonderful. But
yeah.
I guess if you live in an era where death is just looming around every corner, wonder is a kind of a bad thing. You want run of the mill. You want reliable.
Yeah, you know, full of wonder has a different, you know, connotation than just today is what I'm, I think I'm getting at. You know, today is like, you know, if you wonder at something, well, even if you're, you know, like you see something unexplained, you know, like there's an air of that there.
Okay.
Of like, you know, I don't know what this is. And that can be a little frightening in some ways, I think. Yeah. Anyway,
sure.
If that's your advice, I'll take it, friend, whatever may befall me. And so he did as the pilot advised. His horse was taken aboard and he climbed in after, and they set out and sailed to the other bank. The pilot's house was close to the water and was such that a count could have disembarked there. He had every comfort in that house. The pilot led his guest and his prisoner inside and gave them the fine. The prisoner is the other knight that Gawain had just
right and
pushed
he's
over, right? Yeah.
Wait, they're not like rushing him to a hospital or nothing?
I guess not. They gave him the finest welcome that he could.
You
that
like a
the pilot
hospital?
could. Yeah, probably, right?
Bandages.
Well, sir, let's find out, right? Let's see. This Sir Gawain was served with everything befitting a worthy man. He dined on plover and pheasant, and plover jan, which I
yeah,
had to
it
look
hit
this
me.
up,
Yep.
yeah,
Yep.
Are members of a widely distributed group of wading birds of family Charadridae, something like that. Term plover applies to all the members of the family, though only half of them included in their name. So it's a bunch of, they look like really small pheasants.
Okay,
So,
so
and
they're
that's the
like
next
a
one.
game, they're a
Plover
game
and
bird.
pheasants.
Yeah,
Yeah,
sure.
all these are right here.
Okay.
Plover, pheasant, and partridge. Partridge is like quail, dude. It looks just like a fucking quail.
I know them from the pear
The
tree.
pear tree. Yeah, of
Yeah.
course. Yeah. So they're kind of cute, you know, like, but they're kind of plump. I could see why you'd want to try to eat one, honestly. Like, look like little drumsticks. So.
Sure. Yeah.
Yeah.
Hey.
Anyway, sorry, vegans, and venison, which also I
Yeah,
want to
sure.
eat.
Yep.
Yeah. And the wines were strong and clear, white and red, new and old. The pilot was delighted with his prisoner and with his guests. They dined for a long while until finally the table was cleared away and they washed their hands again.
Guys, I'm like really bleeding out here. I like wine and stuff is cool, but unless someone has like a blood transfusion,
He
I don't
lost
think
it.
I'm making the night.
Full fucking Gawain. All he needs is a drumstick, my friend. Yes, totally fine. Sir Gawain's host and lodging that night were much to his liking. He deeply appreciated the pilot's hospitality, and it pleased him greatly. Him is unclear here. I don't know if it's referring to Sir Gawain or the pilot. Anyway,
Sure.
next morning, as soon as he saw the daybreak, he rose as he should and was as was his custom, and the pilot rose likewise to look after his guests. They both went and leaned at the windows of a turret, and Sir Gawain gazed out over the countryside, which was beautiful indeed. He saw the forests and the plains and the castle on the cliff. "Host," he said, "if you don't mind, I'd like to ask you, who is the lord of this land and that castle?" But his host replied, "I don't know, sir." "You don't know? You astonish me. You're a retainer of this castle, and it brings you a handsome revenue, yet you don't know who it is that's lord?" "I can tell you in all truthfulness," he said, "that I don't know and have never known." "Then tell me, kind host," said Gawain, "who defends and guards the castle?" "It's very finely guarded, sir. There are 500 weapons, bows as well as crossbows, always ready to shoot. If the castle were ever threatened, they'd shoot ceaselessly and never tire. So ingeniously are they arranged. But I'll tell you this much. There is a queen at the castle, a most noble, rich, and wise lady, and of the highest lineage. She came to live in this land with her great treasure of gold and silver and made the mighty house that you see before you. And she brought with her a lady whom she dearly loves, whom she calls queen and daughter. This other lady has a daughter too, who does nothing to debase or shame her line, for I don't think there's a girl of fairer looks or manners beneath heaven. And the hall is well protected indeed by magic and enchantment."
Whoa! Okay. And a lot of confusing. Okay,
There's three
there's three
generations of hot
ladies.
chicks. Yeah.
But one of them,
Queens. They're all queens. Yeah.
a queen and daughter, which that's Okay, so is she Grand Queen? I don't.
I don't know.
How does the
Yeah.
lineage work there? And they've got
You'll
they're
see
witches.
later. It's
They've.
it doesn't clear up any confusion.
I'm sure.
Yeah.
But they're witches. They straight up have magic and gold back there.
Oh, they got a ton of gold.
Cool. Great. All right. Sick.
Yeah, they're pretty sweet, right? So far, so good. And the hall is well protected indeed by magic and enchantment, as I'll tell you now if you wish to hear. In that great hall, a clerk, well versed in astronomy, whom the queen brought with her, has created such great marvels that you've never heard their like. For no knight can enter there and live as long as it takes to ride a league if he is tainted with any evil vice of cupidity, lying, or avarice. And here I'll define a few
Yes,
things.
please. What is cupidity
I
and
want to start with a league. How long do you think a league is, Jan?
I know that very famously,
Yeah,
30,000 Leagues Under the Sea is a lot. A league is, I'll go with a quarter of a mile.
Okay. So it turns out there's a couple of different possibilities here, depending on what you want. But there is a range. So league, any of several European units of measurement ranging from 2.4 to 4.6 statute miles. Statute here means universal or standard. So, but they're
Okay.
widely accepted to be 3 miles.
Okay. You
So
know what's funny? That
20,000
was
leagues
my
under the sea
first.
would be 60,000 miles under the
A lot of
sea,
time spent
which
down there.
is impossible for our seas currently. Yeah.
Sure.
That would put you well into space.
I think it meant like 30,000 leagues traveled under the sea.
If you go
Like if you, yeah, because you could do,
vertically,
yeah,
yes.
exactly, and just kind
Oh no,
of
horizontally. Vertically, you'd be
you'd go big, be in
into
space.
space. That's a good point, Jan. Thank you.
Yeah, for sure. See, I've got a smarter too. I know
See,
things.
yeah. I see what you did there.
Oh, God.
Let's see here.
Okay, what was the there were two terms you brought up.
Cupidity, right? Is the next one. So cupidity, this one's kind of fun, but essentially it means greed or desire of wealth, right? Like primarily for property and wealth. However, there is like a secondary meaning, the kind of sexual desire.
Okay,
But
sure.
I pulled one for etymology .com, and it was despite the primarily erotic sense of the Latin word, in English, cupidity originally and still especially means a desire for wealth. And it kind
Okay.
of ties in.
So
Avarice
good.
is greed also.
Yeah, sure. Greed. Greed.
So,
That, yeah.
if it, so what it's saying is anybody who enters the hall, right, has any greed in them, whenever they ride more than 3 miles from the castle, they die.
Okay. Wow. A hell of a curse.
Yeah. A coward or a traitor cannot endure there. The disloyal and the perjurers cannot survive. Perjury is, just lying under oath, right?
Okay.
But die there promptly. But there are many squires gathered there from many lands serving at the castle. Hold on. This thing froze. Serving at the castle as a training for arms. There are well over 500, some bearded, others not.
No.
100 have neither beards nor mustaches.
Oh boy,
Oh
I
man.
can't.
Yeah.
You can't just. I can't picture where we are right now outside of like there's a magic castle with some people around there. But we're gonna go into the facial hair to see. I didn't know. I should have expected everyone else in this story to be bearded. I am just like, why is this coming up now? Everyone else in this story has had a beard. Insane. Insane.
Well, I don't know, Jan. Here you go. 100 more have beards just beginning.
We can't get like three lines of description about the boat or all right, go on. Let's find out what like their chest hair looks like. Let's find out if they shave their armpits.
100 others shave and crop their beards each week. And there are 100 who are whiter than wool, and 100 who are turning gray.
Thank you for this brief history of the squires that run the magic castle. Can we find out anything more about the three witches? I now know. That was a trip. Oh, we're still going.
Oh,
great,
yeah.
Great,
yeah.
great, great.
And there are old ladies without husbands or lords. They've been wrongfully disinherited of their lands and positions since their husbands died.
Let's find out about their beards. Tell me about the old lady beards. Go for it.
And with the two queens, there are orphan girls who are kept with great honor.
Okay.
All these people go about their lives at the castle, nursing a wild and impossible hope. They're waiting for a knight to come and support them, who will restore the ladies to their positions, give husbands to the girls, and make the squires knights. But all the sea will turn to ice before they find a knight who can stay in that hall, for he would have to be handsome and wise, wholly free of cupidity, worthy and bold, noble and loyal, and clean of all baseness and wickedness.
Wait, why did handsome make it in? And why
No,
is that
he's,
first?
bro, this matters.
Everything else like makes it, you got to be pure of heart. You got
Right.
to, you can't be a liar.
You can't be
Also,
ugly.
you got to be hot.
Yeah.
Are you hot? No
Yeah.
face scars. No, yeah. Oh, cool. Cool. Sure.
If such a knight came, he could be lord of the castle and restore the lands to the ladies and bring an end to the deadly wars and have all the girls all married, and the knights, the squires, and cast out the enchantments of the hall without delay. This news delighted Sir Gawain and appealed to him greatly. "Host," he said, "let's go down. Have my arms and my horse brought to me at once, for I don't want to dally here. I want to go." "Where, sir?" said the pilot. "Oh, stay, God keep you today and tomorrow and longer still." "Bless your house, host," said Sir Gawain, "but that shall not be. I'm going, God help me, to see those girls and the marvels of the hall." "Hush, sir, if it please God, you'll do no such foolish thing. Take my advice and stay." "Hush, host, do you take me for a vain-hearted coward? God forsake my soul if I ever take such advice." "In faith, sir."
I'm stealing that. I'm so sorry. I can't
Yeah.
just let us trample past screaming hush host
Yeah, that's pretty good.
to a person hosting you. Pretty fucking good. That's
Yeah, there's some zingers in the old days. "In faith, sir, I'll hold my tongue." This is the pilot. "For I'll be wasting my breath," the host. "Go, since you want to so earnestly, but it grieves me. But I'll guide you there. And I'll tell you, no escort could be more valuable to you than I. But I want to ask a favor of you." Sir Gawain said, "What favor, host? Tell me." Host said, "Grant it first." Okay. "Good host, I'll do your will, provided it's not shameful." Then he commanded that his horse be brought from the stable, ready to ride, and called for his arms again, and they were brought to him. He armed and mounted and set off. And the pilot likewise mounted his palfrey, wanting to lead Gawain faithfully to where he did not wish him to go.
Okay.
They rode on until, at the foot of the steps before the hall, they found a one-legged man sitting all alone on a bundle of straw.
What kind of beard are we fucking with? One leg? Does he have a? Did he shave like yesterday? What's his? What's the state of his face doing?
He had a false leg.
Okay, well, actually, that's a pretty good. Yeah, okay, so he's got a peg leg,
made of silver or silver
whoa,
plated.
okay, I was picturing piratey guy, but now I'm picturing cyborg. Sick.
Inlaid here and there with gold and precious stones.
He's got an infinity like fucking a prosthetic leg. Sick. He's the Lannister. He's Jamie Lannister with a like fancy like metal leg. Sick. Okay.
The one-legged man's hands were not idle, for he had a knife and was busy sharpening an ashwood stick.
Okay. Ashwood, I imagine, is just a type of tree. Great.
Yeah. Yep. An ash is a very common tree in the British and French area. He did not address, and actually, I think they're widely found in the United States too, but he did not address the two riding past him, and they said nothing to him.
Oh, fuck, you missed out. That was a solid NPC. That would have been a bitch in side quest. What?
The pilot drew Sir Gawain to him and said, "Sir, what do you make of that one-legged man?" "His false leg isn't made of poplar, that's for certain," said Sir Gawain. "It looks beautiful to me," and poplar is a type of cheap tree. It's like,
okay, you know, okay.
There.
Great.
"Before God," said the pilot, "he's rich indeed with great and handsome revenues. You'd hear news now that would distress you greatly if I weren't accompanying and escorting you." And they rode on until they reached the hall.
Are we for real? We.
Yeah.
Oh my God. Just what a poor decision. You've introduced just what could be. Absolutely bitching care. How did he lose the leg?
There's so many questions. So many questions. Yeah.
And we're probably not going to meet him again, huh? He's probably just faded on.
Jan, I hope you enjoyed your time with him.
God damn it.
I hope you really liked him.
Why? I did. I wanted to know what was happening with him.
Okay. Its interest was high indeed, and the doors were rich and beautiful. All the hinges and staples were pure gold, so my source book says. One of the doors was of ivory. That's the narrator, by the way. That's
That he's there.
Yep, sure. He's there. One of the doors was of ivory, most finely carved. The other was of ebony and likewise sculpted on its face. So it's cool, like black and white fucking doors. Yeah. And both
with
of them
gold trim.
Yeah, both of them shone with gold and jewels. The paving of the hall was of many different colors, green and red, indigo and deep blue, most finely worked and polished. In the middle of the hall, there stood a bed.
Okay. And this is witch territory for sure.
Oh, yeah. Here we go. And not one part of it was wooden. Every bit of it was gold.
Okay. So big gold, uncomfortable bed.
Except the cords, which were made of silver.
Okay. Great. Sure. Needed details.
I tell you no lie about the bed. Wherever the cords were interlaced, there hung a little bell, and across it was spread a great coverlet of samite. Samite is rich silk, right? And on each of the bedposts was mounted a garnet, big type of gem, which yielded more light than they're yellow or orangish, which yielded more light than four brightly burning candles. The bed stood on grotesque carved dogs with scowling faces, and the dogs were mounted on four casters so smooth and swift that the bed could be sent from one end of the hall to the other at the push of a single finger. So you know what a caster is?
Yeah, a caster wheel?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Isn't that pretty sweet? Yeah.
They've got,
I figured that shit out pretty quick.
Yeah movable caster wheels on a bed. You know, we use casters today. I wonder how different they are.
Probably not that much, honestly. Oh, well, today's tolerances would probably be a little tighter on the more critical stuff. But the concept of it actually goes back really, really far, because if you take a giant rock and you take a really small rock, you can roll the giant rock on the small rock if you got a couple of them. Right. So people think this is one of the ways they could have moved ancient rocks. Right. And there's a guy that has proved it in his backyard by moving like his barn and stuff. So it's kind of interesting. If you look up some of the ancient, cause you know, like pyramids, are like 4,000 BC.
Yeah. They're back there. Oh yeah.
Yeah. Cleopatra is closer to us than she was the pyramids when they were built.
Sure.
You know, by a fair amount too, you know? So, because she's closer to like 500, you know, 300 BC or something like that, 200 BC, even 60, that's still like 2,000 years of difference, you know, like, which is just nuts, dude.
So moving stuff has been around for a minute, sure.
100%. So, and this one is so good that you can move this huge gold metal bed with a single finger, right? The bed was such that truly none like it was ever made for a king or a count or ever will be. And there it stood.
Big
in the middle
claims,
of the
big yeah, claims. Right.
And believe me, no part of that hall was made of chalk. The walls were made of marble, and there were windows above so clear that through the glass, anyone watching carefully could see all who entered the hall as soon as they came through the door. The walls were painted in the finest and most expensive colors that can be described or made. I don't want to recount everything just now, but in that hall were a good 400 windows closed and 100 open.
The fuck, that's a lot of... It's a big goddamn hall. That's a lot of windows.
So many windows, too.
It's like a lot of windows. That's Versailles levels.
I don't even think that comes close, honestly, but maybe. Yeah.
Yeah. Holy cow.
Sir Gawain took a good look at the hall, high and low, and here and there. And when he had looked all around, he called the pilot over and said, "Dear host, I can't see anything here to make a man fear to enter this hall. What have you to say? Why did you warn me so earnestly against coming to see it? I'm going to sit on this bed and rest for a while. I've never seen one so sumptuous."
So Gawain's daft.
He's insane.
I thought he was going to be the more tempered, like, knowledgeable knight after hanging out with Percival for so long and everyone acknowledging Percival is a fucking idiot.
Right.
But he's walked into a witch's lair. There is clearly a haunted bed
in
the middle of a arguably unfathomable space. It's hard for me to picture 500 windows or whatever the fuck. And he's just gonna, "Hey, I'm going to go take a rest on this bed that no one's invited me into. It's just what us knights do. We set ourselves up for really shitty encounters."
Yeah, right. "Oh, dear sir, God keep you from going near it," said, you know, the host, right? "If you approach that bed, you'll die the worst death that any knight has ever known." "What shall I do then, host?" said Gawain. "I'll tell you, since I see you're keen to keep your life. In my house, just before you came here, I asked a favor of you, though you didn't know what it was. Now I'll ask you to grant me that boon. Return to your own land and tell your friends and the people of your country how you've seen the most splendid hall that you and they have ever known." Gawain said, "Then I'll say God hates me and I'm damned. I'm sure you mean me well, host, but I'll tell you, not for all the world shall I give up sitting on this bed and seeing the girls I saw leaning at the windows last night."
What? Okay. Windows. Oh man. All of this is probably, he is Percival. It's the exact same reasoning. It's we are not dealing with a more knowledgeable knight. We're dealing with the exact same character.
The pilot stepped back to enforce his point, saying, "You won't see any of those girls. Go back the way you came, for there's no chance of your seeing them. But God save me, the girls and queens and ladies can see you at this very moment through these those glass windows from their chambers on the other side." "In faith," cried Sir Gawain, "if I can't see the girls, I'll at least sit on the bed, for I can't believe such a bed was made except for one thing, to have a worthy man or a noble lady lie upon it. And I'm going to sit on it now, upon my soul, whatever may befall me."
You can't stop me. I'm going to sit on this cursed bed, whether you like it or not. This guy's the most annoying member of your D&D party, right? Yeah. He's the guy that is just
clearly cursed.
It's clearly cursed. I don't care. I'm going to get it. Yeah. It's like, what? Also, I don't know what the pilot's motives are, because he just brought this guy into a cursed place.
I don't know.
What a weird
And then here you go. The pilot saw there was no stopping him and said nothing more. But he had no desire to stay in the hall and see him sit on the bed, and he took his leave. Saying,
yep, great. Right off out of this story. Just like our fucking cool, like, Silver Leg guy. Yeah. Okay.
Sir, your death upsets and grieves me deeply. No knight has ever sat upon that bed and left it alive, for it is the bed of marvels, in which a shitty D&D.
Yeah, sure.
But kind of cool, honestly, as far as death beds go, that's pretty sweet. Okay. You know, I'm back into the bed of marvels.
I've been in it the whole time.
It's got, well, you'll see, in which no one sleeps or slumbers or rests or sits or rises from it alive and well. It is a grievous pity that you're going to put your life in pledge never to be redeemed or ransomed. Since I can't draw you away by love or argument, may God have mercy on your soul, for my heart couldn't bear to see you die. And with that, he left the hall.
Dramatic much, but okay.
Sir Gawain, armed as he was, with his shield hung at his neck, sat down upon the bed. As he did so, the bed cords made a mighty din as all the bells began to ring until the whole hall resounded. And just then all the windows opened and the marvels and enchantments were now revealed.
Oh, down. Dude, I picture a lighting change.
Oh, the, yeah. That's sweet.
Right. There's like, yeah, the whole place, like
goes,
all
yeah.
The candles that were lit are like, yeah.
In the high flames. Right. Yeah.
Love it. Love it.
For down through the window flew arrows and crossbow bolts. More than 700 smashed into Sir Gawain's shield.
They made note that there were only 500
weapons.
Nope, Jan, earlier.
You heard wrong.
There are 200 unaccounted for crossbows.
Magic.
Yeah, too true. Too
and he
true.
Did not know what had hit him. The enchantment was such that no man could see where the bolts were coming from or who was shooting them.
I'm pretty sure after 300 bolts, I would figure, even blind, I think I could start to hone in on where the 700 rounds of ammunition are coming from.
Yeah, absolutely. Especially a single shot bow and crossbow. Anyway, and you can well imagine the mighty din as the crossbows and bows were loosed. Gawain would not have been there then for 1,000 marks. But suddenly, the windows closed without anybody pushing them. Sir Gawain began to pull out the bolts embedded in his shield, and they had wounded him in several places, and he was losing blood.
700 rounds? You're looking like Marv from Sid City, right? Like you're a cheese grater.
Yeah, 100%. You know, at that point, it's just a silhouette of arrow shafts. But before he had drawn out all of them, he was presented with another test. A villain kicked open a door, and a ravenous lion, strong and fierce, of wondrous size, leapt out of a vault and in through the door and attacked Sir Gawain with savage fury.
What the hell's happening? I'm sorry?
Somebody kicked open a door and let in a lion.
A villain. Opened a door.
Uh-huh.
and kicked open
a door.
Uh-huh. And a surprise attack lion.
Lion.
Jumped
in England,
out of... Yeah,
France,
okay.
Maybe.
Yeah, sure. Great. Yeah. All right.
Its claws tore through his shield as though through wax, and it drove him to his knees. But Gawain leapt up instantly, drew his naked sword from its scabbard, and dealt the beast such a blow that he cut off its head and both its feet.
Sick. Okay. And he's not like shying away from the details. Great. All right.
Sir Gawain was jubilant. For the feet were left hanging on his shield by the claws, one on the inside and the other on the front.
Okay, cool. I am okay with the description of this combat scene. Great.
Yeah. Having killed the lion, he sat down on the bed again.
What are you? My guy, what are you doing? You already triggered the trap. What, you're going to be pummeled by another 700 rat? They're going to release 2 attack lions next. Like,
and his host came running back into the hall, his face beaming, and found Gawain sitting on the bed. Sir, he said, you've nothing more to fear, I promise you. Take off all of your armor now, for you've cast out all the enchantments of the hall forevermore, and you'll be served and honored here by young and old. May God be praised.
Okay.
Then a stream of squires appeared, dressed in the finest tunics, and they all went down on their knees and said, "Good, dear, sweet sir, we offer our services to you. We've long awaited and yearned for your coming." "I was later than you'd have wished, it seems," said Sir Gawain.
Wait, I am so... He killed the lion,
yeah,
and now has cleared the place of the enchantment. Where'd the villain go?
I no idea.
What about the witches? I thought we were going to get a sweet witch scene.
Yeah, you might. I ain't gone. Then some began to disarm him, while others went to stable his horse, which had been left outside. And while he was being disarmed, a most beautiful and comely girl entered, with a circlet of gold upon her head, and her hair was as bright as the gold, or brighter. Her face was white and illuminated by nature with a pure red hue. The girl was lithe and fair, with a comely build and a tall, fine bearing. And behind her came other girls of considerable beauty. And a boy came in all alone, and on his shoulders was draped a gown, along with a tunic, a mantle, and a surcoat. The mantle was lined with ermine. And if you remember, like, mantle is like an outer cloak. So It's like, he's got like underwear, outerwear, super outerwear, and a coat on top of that. So It might be cold, I don't know. And then the mantle is ermine. Ermine in heraldry, it's like a fur that's made out of these stoats. It's like actually an animal that they would stitch together. That's an ermine. Ermine is like a creature. They're like a stoat. And so they have a pattern, these hanging black tips. And so they make a pattern out of that. But anyway, the mantle was lined with ermine and with sable, black as a berry. And the cloth was of a rich red wool. Sir Gawain gazed in wonder at the girls he saw coming and could not help jumping to his feet to meet them, saying, "Welcome, young ladies." That's what he said. Just like that, too.
Yep. This guy's got moves.
The first of them bowed to him and said, "Good sir, my lady the queen sends you greetings and commands all her people to hold you as her rightful lord and to come and serve you. I shall be the first to offer you my service in all faithfulness. And these girls here all hold you as their lord and have long desired your coming. They're overjoyed to see you, the finest of all worthy men. I've nothing more to say, sir, but we're ready to serve you." And with that, they all knelt and bowed to him. There you go. Couldn't have written it. Vowing to serve and honor him. He bade them rise again and be seated. The sight of them pleased him greatly, partly because of their beauty, but more because they were making him their prince and lord. He rejoiced more than he had ever done at the honor that God had granted him.
What he found sexier than their looks was their subjugation.
Yeah. It's pretty fucked up.
It seems like they were just ready to give whoever could take a barrage of 700 arrows and a lion attack. That's the guy. That's the new guy.
Then the girl stepped forward and said, "My lady sends you this gown to don before she sees you. For she, being full of courtesy and wisdom, thinks you'll have suffered great toil and heat and hardship. So put it on and see if it fits you. For wise men guard against the cold after being hot, for it endangers and benumbs the blood. So my lady the queen sends you an ermine robe to protect you from the cold. For just as water turns to ice, so blood can stop its flow and harden when a man shivers after being hot."
Okay.
Yeah, and there is something to a medieval idea of balance and health, but it's all a bunch of bullshit by today's standards, right?
Sure. Yeah. It's kind of even hard to track, but yeah.
Yeah, a little bit. She's saying, like, after you've been so hot, your blood will cool down and it'll turn to ice. You know, so kind of like if you were a lizard.
Yeah, right. Yeah. Like, is a thing that's never happened to anyone.
It's the idea of balance is in there. Like, I'm going to give you something to heat you up when you're cooling down.
Sure.
So, and Sir Gawain replied, like the most courteous knight in the world, "May that lord in whom no good thing is lacking guard my lady the queen and guard you too for speaking so kindly and being courteous and fair. The lady must be wise indeed, I think, having such courteous messengers. She certainly knows a knight's needs when she sends me such a gown to wear. I thank her for it. Give her my deepest thanks. I shall, I promise you, said the girl, most willingly. And in the meantime, you can put on the gown and view the lie of the land from the windows, or if you like, climb the tower and look at the forests and meadows and rivers until I return. With that, the girl tucked away, and Sir Gawain donned the gown, which was rich indeed, and fastened the neck with a buckle which hung on the collar. Then he decided to go and look at the view from the tower, and he set off with his host. They climbed a spiral staircase at the side of the vaulted hall until they reached the top of the tower and saw the country all around, fairer than any man could describe. Sir Gawain gazed at the river and at the meadowlands and the forests, teeming with game. And looked at his host and said, by God, host, I'd love to live here and go hunting and shooting in these forests. Sir, said the pilot, you'd better say no more of that. It's been laid down, as I've often heard tell, that whoever was so loved by God that he came to be called master and lord and protector here would, rightly or wrongly, never be able to leave this house. So it's no good talking of hunting and bows, for this is where you'll stay. You'll never leave here again.
Wow. Okay. This is taking a turn. Great. I was about to say, it's basically the exact same story as Percival. Percival showed up and got a castle and a wife for, reading the castle of
the baddies.
An ill host. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Silence, host, Sir Gawain cried. Say no more. Or you'll drive me out of my mind. I'll tell you, if I couldn't go out when I wanted, I could not live here for more or for 7 days than for 70 years. So he's saying, like, I would, you know, I just want to leave. And with that, he strode down from the tower and back into the hall, lost in angered and troubled thought. He sat down on the bed again, his face morose and grim. At last, the girl returned. And when Sir Gawain saw her, he rose to meet her, angry as he was, and greeted her. But she saw that his speech and countenance had changed and realized something had angered him. But she did not dare refer to it. Instead, she said, sir, my lady will come and see you whenever you wish. And dinner is ready now, and you may eat it if you like, either down here or up above. But Sir Gawain replied, I've no wish for food, my dear. A curse upon my body if I eat or celebrate before I hear news that I badly need, news to comfort me. The girl returned at once in consternation, and the queen summoned her and asked her for news, saying, dear granddaughter, how did you find the good Lord whom God has sent us? Oh, my lady, honored queen, said the other queen, I'm wounded and dying of grief for the good, kind-hearted Lord, for the only words he'll utter are of anger and rage. I can't tell you why, for he didn't tell me, and I didn't dare to ask. But I can tell you this. The first time that I saw him today, I found him so polite and fair of speech and happy that one could never tire of listening to his words or gazing at his joyful face. And now suddenly he's changed and would gladly be dead, I think, for everything he hears displeases him. Don't worry, granddaughter, he'll calm down when he sees me. However great his rage may be, I'll soon cast it out and set joy in its place. Okay. Then the queen set off and came to the hall, and with her went the other queen, who was only too pleased to go. And with them, they took a good 250 girls many squires.
I have nearly no semblance of what the hell's that. Who, which queen's leaving?
Yep.
Yep. Okay, great. I'm just making sure. One of the queens is leaving with an additional. Okay, great. Great.
Yeah, there's good. Both of them going. They took 250 girls and at least as many squires. So there's like 500 and some people going after.
Oh, man. Oh, okay. Right.
Yeah. The heart often guesses right. And as soon as Sir Gawain saw the queen coming, holding the other by the hand, his heart told him that she was the queen of whom he had heard. He guessed with ease, seeing her white tresses. So white hair, right? Which hung down to her hips, and the white mottled skin silk she wore, finely worked with golden flowers. He was not slow to go and meet her. and they greeted each other. And she said, I am lady of this castle, sir, second to you. I yield the lordship to you, for you have well deserved it. But are you of King Arthur's household? Yes, indeed, lady. And tell me, are you one of the knights of the watch who have done many feats of prowess? No, lady. I believe you. And are you one of the round table who are the most esteemed in all the world? Lady, he said, I wouldn't dare to say I'm one of the most esteemed. I don't consider myself one of the finest, nor do I think I'm one of the worst.
Right, okay. Which is a perfect knightly answer. Yeah, yeah, sure. Yeah. That's the first knightly thing he's done this fucking episode. Yeah.
Yeah.
Dude. Yeah.
And she replied, good sir, that is a most courteous reply, claiming neither the fame of the finest nor the censure of the worst. But tell me now of King Lot. How many sons did he have by his wife? Oh, so King Lot, this one's kind of fun, is a British monarch in Arthurian legend. He's introduced in Geoffrey of Monmouth's pseudo-historical Historia Regum Britanniae as King Arthur's brother-in-law.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, who serves as regent of Britain between the reigns of Uther Pendragon and Arthur. So, like Uther Pendragon, who's King Arthur's father, dies, but Arthur is given to, you know, depending on what you read.
Okay,
he's not
I understand.
King immediately in some, in at least Geoffrey of Monmouth's story. Okay. You know, and so in between, it's King Lot, and he, when Arthur gets Excalibur or some other such, he gets the stuff, right? But okay. He has appeared regularly in works of chivalric romance. Sometimes he's King Arthur's enemy, and okay. Sometimes he's his ally. He's often portrayed as some kind of ruler, either of Lothian, which is where he gets Lot, I think, from, or Norway or Orkney. His literary character is probably derived from some material from some other saints. So yeah, that's King Lot. So in this case, King Lot is Sir Gawain's dad.
Okay, great. Okay.
So she's asking him, you know, tell me of King Lot, how many sons did he have? Four, my lady. Tell me their names, she said. Gawain was the eldest, lady, and the next was Engervain.
And
the
he's
proud
talking
one with strong hands.
He just said himself.
I think this might be the host. Okay. Me see. Lady, he said, I wouldn't dare to that. I don't consider myself one of the finest. She replied, good sir. But yeah, she's
Gawain.
Asking him. Yeah, yeah. Gawain was the eldest, lady, and the next was Engervain. The proud one with strong hands. The other two are named Geheriot and Garrett. So
okay.
I
have no idea why she's asking for this information first, but yeah
it's kind of a strange, you know, they're just giving you the rundown of these people. These are all pretty famous knights in Arthurian legend.
It really feels like he's just shoehorning in any way to do knight name drops.
Like you remember Gawain and his brothers? Yeah, it's them. Yeah.
And just shoehorn it in through this yet another woman that's entered the plot line for no better reason than to just pick Gawain's brain.
Yeah. And the queen said, God help me, sir. Those are indeed their names, I think. I would to God they were all together here with us. But tell me now, do you know King Urien? Yes, lady. He has a son at court. Yes, lady. And you might know that name, actually. He came up once. He has two of great renown. One of them is named Sir Ewain.
Hey, I remember my boy Ewain.
The courteous and polite. I'm happier all day if I see him in the morning, for I find him so wise and courteous. The other is named Ewain. But he's not his full brother. That's why he's called the bastard. He outfights any knight who does battle with him. They're both at court and most worthy, wise, and courteous. And King Arthur, good sir, she said, how is he faring now? Better than ever, in finer health and in spirits, and stronger. In faith, sir, that it should be so, for King Arthur is a child. Why, he's certainly no more than 100 years old. No, he can't be. But I'd like you to tell me just one thing more, if you don't mind. How is the queen? How is she faring?
Great. She's doing just fine.
Yeah. You know, why he's certainly no more than 100 years old. No, he can't be. I don't know what to make of that line. you know, other than it's Jess, or they're saying he's old or not old. Anyway, so now they're talking about the queen. Right? They just shipped right over. Yeah.
Oh, we're just ping-ponging our way through the how are all the royals doing? Are they, what, tell me about the Prime Minister of Australia. How's he doing?
So about the queen, he says, truly, lady, she is so courteous and beautiful and wise that God never made a race or land in which so fair a lady could be found. There have never been a lady of such renown since God formed the first woman from Adam's rib, and she is justly renowned. For just as a wise teacher teaches little children, so my lady the queen instructs and teaches everyone. All goodness stems and passes down from her. No one can leave my lady without good guidance. She knows so well each person's worth and what she needs to do to please him. No man does any good or honorable deed that he has not learned from my lady. And no man, however unhappy, leaves my lady with his mind still troubled.
Okay. Oh.
It's a little sexual.
Yeah.
I don't know. There's an air of that. Yeah.
It seems like pretty much every lady we've come across has had a little bit of a flirty vibe to them. So.
And she says, nor will you, sir, leave me so. He said, I believe you, lady, for before I saw you, I didn't care what happened to me. Such was my despair and grief. But now I'm as happy and joyful as I could ever be. Sir, said the white-haired queen, in the name of God who gave me life, your happiness will double yet, and your joy will increase constantly and never fail. And since you've now at ease and happy, dinner is ready, and you may eat whenever you wish and wherever you like. If you wish, you may eat up above, or if you prefer, you can come and eat in the chambers below.
Ooh.
Lady.
giving me an offer I can't refuse.
Lady, I wouldn't exchange this hall for any room, for I've been told that no knight has ever sat or dined here before. No, sir, none that ever left again or stayed here for as long as it would take to ride a league. Then I shall dine here, my lady, by your leave. I grant you that, sir, willingly. You shall be the first knight who has ever dined here.
That, I mean, she put the caveat before that, you know, knights have dined there. They just die when they leave. But sure. Great. Sure.
With that, the queen departed, leaving 250 of her most beautiful girls with him.
The third queen leaves the scene. We don't get a single goddamn name. And he leaves 250. That is such a crowded room. That is such a crowd.
Oh, yeah. They dined there with him in the hall and served him and ensured his comfort, providing for his every wish.
This has to look like a fucking Warhammer, a fantasy Warhammer map.
Yep.
There's right? Just shit tons of models around. All right.
And squires served him joyfully at dinner. Some of them white-haired, some graying, and others not. What a weird detail, dude.
Yep.
Yeah. Others had yet to grow a beard.
again with the beard.
And two of these came and knelt before him.
Oh, I mean, could you imagine?
One of them cutting meat for him and the other pouring wine.
Great.
Sir Gawain seated his host beside him, and the dinner was not short. It lasted longer than a day around Trinity.
And if I was to be ignorant, what's a day around Trinity?
Trinity is a Trinity Sunday, the first Sunday after Pentecost. If you're wondering what Pentecost is, it's a Christian holiday, which takes place on the 49th day after Easter Sunday.
What the fuck makes the 49th day? What the fuck makes day 49 after Easter?
It commemorates the descent of the Holy Spirit upon Mary, mother of Jesus and the apostles of Jesus, while they were in Jerusalem celebrating the Feast of Weeks, as described in the Acts of the Apostles.
You're telling me they got all this shit down on the books? I don't buy it.
While the Catholic Church believes the Holy Spirit descended upon Mary, this is not recorded in the New Testament.
So it's just just fan fiction that some guys talked about at some point, and now it's canon.
Yeah.
Fuck. Okay. Cool. Sure. So what makes it longer than any other Sunday?
I'm guessing this year, Pentecost, let me see here, is around May, right? Like, so I'm thinking the idea is that it's just a longer day of the year, like for a feast, okay. You know? So it's okay. Just like
sure.
A long time. Or they used to eat a lot that day. I don't know, you know, but they're saying, you know, that it's a long dinner. I'd imagine this was a big feast day, so yeah.
Sure.
But then it says, for it was dark, black night, and many great torches were burning before the meal was over. There was lively talking over dinner, and afterwards they danced for a long while before taking to their beds, as they all rejoiced with all their hearts for their Lord, whom they dearly loved.
And we're talking like a pretty banging party. There's at least 300 people there. Yeah.
Right. Yeah, this is a great time. This is a razor, dude. Yeah. And when he decided to retire, he lay down on the bed of marvels. Beneath his head, one of the girls placed a pillow, which made him sleep most peacefully.
I like to think all 300 people are just standing around the bed in like a massive circle as he's just like, nom, 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 nom.
When the time came to wake next morning, a gown of Hermione and Samite had been prepared for him, and the pilot of whom I've told you came and roused him and arranged his dressing and washing of hands. And Clarissant was there too, the worthy, fair, honorable, wise, and courteous girl. We hadn't mentioned her before, but here she is.
Yeah, right? Here she is. She made it. Great. I'm glad you joined the rodeo.
Then she went into the chambers to her grandmother, the queen. Okay, so she's the granddaughter queen.
Okay. God damn it, a fourth one.
I think it's the third one, but I think they finally gave her a name.
Didn't two queens already leave?
Who gives a shit? and Clarissa is probably what it was, who asked her, by the faith you owe me, granddaughter, has your Lord risen yet? Yes, lady, some while ago. Where is he, dear granddaughter? He went to the turret, my lady. I don't know if he's come down yet. I shall go to him, and if it please God, he shall have only joy and happiness today. With that, the queen rose, eager to go and see Sir Gawain. She spotted him eye up at the windows of a turret, watching a girl and a fully armed knight riding across a meadow. The two queens came side by side to where Sir Gawain stood watching and found him and his host at two windows. Sir, said the queens together, a happy rising to you. May today be a joyful day for you. May that glorious father grant it so, who made his daughter his mother. May the one who sent his son to earth to advance Christianity grant you great joy, lady. But come to this window, if you will, and tell me who that girl can be coming this way. There's a knight with her carrying a quartered shield. The lady looked down at them and said, I'll tell you now, it's the one who accompanied you here last night. May the fires of hell consume her. So it's the evil chick, the one that you liked.
Okay, yeah. Sure. Yeah. Okay, yes.
The fun one. Yeah. The feminist one.
Yeah, she was like being a little troll.
Yeah, she's great. But don't concern yourself with her. She's an arrogant and wicked woman. And forget about the knight that she's brought with her. I beg you, for I tell you truly, he's the most courageous of all knights. He doesn't play at fighting. I've seen him kill many knights at this landing place. By your leave, lady, said Sir Gawain, I wish to go and speak to the girl. God grant, sir, that I've never give you a leave to harm yourself. Leave her to her own affairs. She's a terrible girl. You'll never, if it pleases God, leave this hall for such a pointless cause. And you must never leave here at all, unless you wish to do us wrong. Oh, come now, good-hearted queen. That distresses me. I think myself ill-rewarded at this hall if I could never leave. God grant that I will not be a prisoner here so long. Oh, lady, said the pilot, let him do as he wishes. Don't hold him back against his will, for he might die of grief. Then I shall let him go, said the queen, on condition that if God guards him from death, he'll return here tonight.
So I'm letting him go for the day.
Okay. Yeah, it seems like it, right? Yeah. Have no fear, lady, he said. I'll return if I can, but I ask and beg a favor of you, if you don't mind. Please don't ask my name until 7 days have passed.
weird witch-like logic, but sure.
Yeah, I thought she had he had already said he already gave his name, but just hasn't said that he's Gawain. Just
Yeah,
who the
right?
son of Lot is.
Yeah,
Yeah. So
yeah.
anyway, if that's your wish, I'll refrain from asking, said the queen, for I don't want your ill will. But if you hadn't forbidden it, your name would have been the first thing I'd have asked of you, which is not true. Anyway. And
Yeah.
so they come down from the turret, and the squires came running to arm him, and they fetched his horse, and he mounted fully armed. Then he rode down to the landing place, accompanied by the pilot, and they both climbed into the boat. Oarsmen rowed them from the bank and across to the other side, and Sir Gawain stepped forth.
Okay, so they left the castle, and wasn't he cursed to stay at the castle? Or
Probably.
what? Yeah, but
Yeah,
great. Yep,
but she
sure.
gave him leave, remember, for the day?
Yes, for the
Yeah,
day. Okay,
yeah.
great. And now he has crossed back over, I'm assuming, to the place he was before.
Yeah, where he saw the person riding out, right?
Yeah.
The knight with the girl that was making fun of him, the old lady or whatever, I don't know. And the other knight said to the pitiless girl, tell me, my dear, this knight coming towards us armed, do you know him? So this is now, we've switched perspectives.
We're
Right? Which is kind
now
of an
hang.
advanced technique for this day, but yeah.
Sure. We're
No,
now
Sid.
hanging out with the troll chick and the knight. Yeah. Okay.
So she says, no, but he's the one who brought me here last night. God save me. This is a knight, he replied. He's the very man I've been looking for. I was sorely afraid he escaped me, for no knight born of a mother crosses the border of Galvoy to go and boast that he's come from this land if I have him within my reach. And since God has led him to me, this one shall be seized and held. Thereupon the knight, without a challenge or threat, set his shield on his arm, thrust in his spurs, and charged. And Sir Gawain headed for him, and struck him such a blow that he wounded him gravely in the arm and side.
Okay.
It was not
So
a mortal wound.
zero discussion. They just aggro out on each other.
Yep.
Okay.
For his mail coat held together so well that the whole lance head could not break through, but a full finger's length of the tip pierced his body and bore him to the ground. He got to his feet and saw, to his dismay, the blood from his arm and side flowing down his white hauberk. Which is his, outer armor. He attacked Sir Gawain with a sword, but was soon so tired that he could hold out no longer and had to cry out for mercy. Sir
Dang.
Gawain received his assurances and then handed him to the pilot who was waiting for him. Meanwhile, the wicked girl had climbed from her palfrey. Gawain came up to her and greeted her and said, remount, my good friend, for I'm not going to leave you here. You're coming with me where I must go, back across the river. Oh, knight, she cried, how high and mighty you are now. You'd have had a real battle on your hands if my friend had not been tired by old wounds. He'd have put an end to your lies and silenced your prattling tongue. Have you ever been checkmated in the corner of the board? That's how silent you'd have been. So tell me truly, do you really think you're of greater worth than he because you've defeated him? You must
I mean,
often.
yeah, that's kind of how it works. Yeah, a little bit.
You must often have seen that the weak can sometimes beat the strong. But listen, you've put my sweetheart in the boat. If you left this landing place and came with me beneath the tree and did something that he would always do for me when I wished, then I'd admit you were his equal and wouldn't despise you anymore.
I mean, a lot of women are throwing themselves at Sir Gawain, but he is handsome. We have established that.
If it's only that far, girl, he said, I've no reason to refuse your wish. And she said, God grant you never return from there. And with that, they set off, she in front and he behind. And the girls and ladies in the hall tore their hair and rent their gowns in dismay, crying, oh, alas, alas, why do we not die when we see the one who has to been our Lord going to his death and downfall? That evil, wicked girl goes at his right hand, leading him to the place where no knight returns.
Dang. Okay. So she's got a whole plan.
And 1 second. Okay. Oh, yeah. Alas, were accursed just when we thought our luck was blessed. For God had sent us one endowed with all good qualities, lacking nothing, neither courage nor any other virtues. Thus they lamented for their lord as they watched him go with a wicked girl. When she and Sir Gawain reached the tree, he called to her, saying, "Tell me now, dear girl, have I done my duty, or is there something more you want from me? I'll do it if I can, rather than lose your favor." Then the girl said to him, "Do you see that deep ford ahead where the banks are so high? My love used to cross there, and I don't know any easier place." "Oh, dear girl, I fear that's impossible, for the bank's so high all the way along that no one could go down it." "You daren't go across, I know," cried the girl. "I didn't think you'd have the heart to try, for this is the Perilous Ford, which no one dares cross on any account, unless he is exceptional."
This is straight out of The Labyrinth. I'm loving it. Oh, man.
Oh, yeah. Magic places? Hell yeah.
I'm picturing a lot of dying trees, like super naughty, no leaf trees.
At that, Sir Gawain led his horse down to the bank and saw the deep water below and the sheer bank beyond. But the river was narrow. And when he saw this, Sir Gawain said to himself that his horse had cleared many greater ditches, and he thought he had often heard said that whoever could cross the deep water of the Perilous Ford would be renowned as the finest knight in the world.
I thought he just found out about this.
Apparently, this triggers a deep memory.
All right, mm-hmm. Cool.
So he drew away from the river and came galloping back to leap across, but he failed.
Dang, the first time in the story.
He did not take the jump well and came down in the middle of the ford. But his horse swam on until he got all four hooves on land and gathered himself for a leap and launched himself forward and up onto the great high bank. Once there, he stood stock still, unable to go another step. And Sir Gawain dismounted of necessity, for he saw that his horse was exhausted. So he dismounted at once and decided to take off the saddle. He did so and turned it upside down to dry. Then he removed the horse's saddlecloth and wiped the water from its back and flanks and legs.
Well, it might have liked the water. I mean, if it's exhausted, it might be, you know. He probably knows his horse better than I do. I'll tell you what. I'll give him that.
He's a horseman, so yeah, probably. Yeah. At last, he put the saddle on again and mounted once more.
Need all the saddle details? Yes. But sure.
All of this is crucial information. And rode on at a walk until he caught sight of a knight out hunting with a sparrow hawk. And in the field before him, he had two small retrievers. The knight was more handsome than any tongue could tell.
Wow, yet another 10 out of 10 knockout night. The retrievers are dogs? He's got dogs with them?
He's got two dogs and he's hunting with the sparrowhawk, which is a type of bird that is known for catching small birds.
Oh, yeah. Cool. So he's got like a falcon?
Yeah, he's out hawking. Yeah.
Oh, wow. Yeah. Wow. Yeah. All right.
Really common in the Middle Ages if you got money, because you don't need ammo even.
Sure. Yeah. You just got
impressive feast of animal husbandry, really.
You got to hope that that bird comes back, though.
You got to treat it right? Yeah. If you treat it right, and, you know, that's what they would do. You know, impressive piece of animal handling, really. You know, yeah. Sir Gawain rode up and greeted him and said, "Good sir, may God, who made you fairer than any living man, give you joy and good fortune." And the knight was quick to reply, saying, "You, sir, are good and worthy and gracious. But tell me, if you will, how did you come to leave the wicked girl alone over there? What happened to her companion?" "Sir," said Sir Gawain, "a knight with a quartered shield was with her when I met her." "And what did you do?" "I defeated him in combat." "And what became of him then?" "The pilot took him away, for he said he should be his prisoner." "Indeed, dear brother, he told you the truth. The girl was once my love. But she would never deign to love me or call me her sweetheart. And I promise you, I never kissed her except by force."
Okay. Oh,
it gets
not
worse.
Chill. Okay.
And I never had my way with her, for I loved her against her will.
I don't love the energy. I don't love
Yeah.
the
He said, I never
language.
had, I don't know.
Yeah,
It's not good any way I read it. So I
any
never
which
had my
way,
way with
it's
her, for
not
I loved
great.
her against her will.
Cool.
Does that mean he never, I don't know. If I read too much into it, it's all bad. If I read any into it, it's all bad.
I mean,
I
the
had robbed
language
her.
there. Yeah.
Yeah. I had robbed her of a love of hers whose company she used to share. I killed him and led her off and strove in every way to serve her. But my efforts were wasted, for she sought the chance to leave me as soon as she could. I wonder why.
Yeah, no shit.
Yeah. And took for her love the knight from whom you've just parted her. And he's no joke that knight. He's worthy indeed. So help me, God. And yet from that day forth, he never dared come anywhere near me. But today you've done something that no knight has ever dared before. And in so doing, your valor has made you the finest and most praised knight in the world. It took the greatest courage to leap into the perilous ford. And I tell you truly, no knight has ever come through it before.
Well, how did you get here?
Guy, I don't know. I don't think it's an island. I don't know, man.
Yeah.
Geography
But
makes
if you could
no
just get
sense in this
around,
story.
I'm
Yeah.
just saying, if you could get around the perilous ford,
Yeah.
yeah.
Sir Gawain then said, "Then the girl lied to me, sir, for she led me to believe that her sweetheart crossed it every day for love of her. Did the traitress tell you that? Oh, I wish she'd drown. She must be possessed by a host of demons to tell you such a tale. She hates you. There's no denying it. That devil, may God confound her, meant to have you drowned in the deep and roaring water. But promise me something now, and in return, I'll swear to you that if you ask me anything, whether it be for good or ill, I'll not hide the truth from you if I know it. And you likewise must promise me to tell me truthfully all I wish to know if you can."
This is a recently divorced man at a bar at 3 p.m. on a Tuesday
Yep.
who's just ragingly drunk, right? This is a man with problems.
They exchanged these promises, and Sir Gawain was the first to start questioning, saying, "Sir, tell me about the city I can see over there. Who does it belong to, and what is it called?" "I can certainly tell you that, friend, for it belongs to me entirely. I owe no part of it to any man born. I am vassal to God alone."
Yeah, that's pretty sick.
"It's called Orkinesels."
Orkinesels? We
Something
can
like
work on
that.
the name, but yeah.
Yeah. Orkinesels? I don't know. Anyway, and what's your name? Giro Malon. I've heard it. I've often heard it said, sir, that you're the most worthy and valiant and lord of a very great land. And what's the name of the girl of whom no good word is spoken near or far, as you yourself have testified?" "I can testify indeed," he said, "that she's greatly to be feared, for she's full of scorn and malice. That's why she's called the Haughty Maiden of Nogers."
The Haughty Maiden of Nogres?
Yeah, or Nogres.
Okay.
It's Nogres.
Still, what a haughty tot.
Yeah.
The haughty is
Yes.
God, I was going to try to work in naughty, but I actually like her, so yeah.
Which is where she was born, though she was taken from there when she was very young. So, and Nogres, I think, is where the ogres are from. So,
Okay.
and what's the name of her love, who's gone to be the pilot's prisoner, whether he likes it or not? "I tell you, friend, he's an extraordinary knight, and he's called the Proud Knight of the Narrow Pass. He guards the border of Galbois."
Okay, sure. Setting up locations we haven't heard of before.
Yeah.
Fine. Fantastic.
"And what's the name of the noble, handsome castle I came from today, where I ate and drank last night?" At that, Guillaume Melant turned his back in sorrow and began to move away. But Sir Gawain reminded him, sir, remember your promise and answer me." Guillaume Melant stopped and turned his head and said, "Damn and curse the hour I saw you and gave you that promise. Be gone. I declare you free of your vow, and you absolve me of mine. I'd planned to ask you news of this place, but it seems you know as much about the castle as you do about the moon." sir.
That's pretty good. It's pretty good.
Sir, said Gawain, I was there last night and lay upon the bed of marbles. There's none like it in the world. No man has ever seen its equal. By God, he replied, what astounding news. It's delightful listening to your fantasies, like being entertained by a storyteller. I see it now. You're a minstrel. Why, I thought you were a knight and had done some feat of prowess yonder. But come now, tell me truly, did you do any worthy deeds there? And what did you see at the castle? And Sir Gawain told him, sir, when I sat upon the bed, there was a great commotion in the hall. Don't think I'm lying. The bedcords groaned and the bells upon them rang, and closed windows opened by themselves, and crossbow bolts and smooth arrows smashed into my shield, and it were struck the claws of a huge, fierce, bristling lion which had been chained in a vault for a long while. The lion was sent to attack me by a villain who sent it loose, and it lipped at me so mightily and struck at my shield and plunged in its claws so hard that it couldn't pull them free. If you doubt my words, look at the claws still hanging here. I cut off its head, thank God, and its feet too. What do you think of these marks as proof?
Wait. He still has the claws on the shield. They've just been dangling around.
Yep. Look at the claws still hanging here.
Radical. Yeah, he's just left them on.
Honestly.
Bro, he's got arrows sticking out of him and shit. He's just looking like a fucking riot.
Honestly, yeah, pretty hard. Yeah. At this, Guillermelin jumped from his horse and went down on his knees and clasped his hand together and begged Gawain to forgive his foolish words. I forgive you, he said. Remount now. And Guillermelin did so, filled with shame for his foolishness, and said, God save me, sir. I don't think there could be a knight anywhere near or far who would ever have the honor that's befallen you. But tell me, did you see the white-haired queen? Did you ask her who she was and where she was from? I never thought to ask her that, he replied, but I saw her and spoke to her. Then I'll tell you, said Guillermelin, she's King Arthur's mother.
Whoa! God, wow, there's been a lot of familial ties recently. Yeah. Wait, how the fuck old was she portrayed?
I don't know. Yeah, they just mentioned white hair, so...
Okay,
but
okay,
she was kind of hot.
Fair.
I don't know.
Yeah, right.
It's weird. Yeah.
Hey, and you could be old and hot.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, so enter something Pendragon. King Arthur's mom.
Well,
great.
There you go. By the faith, I owe God and his power. King Arthur hasn't had a mother for a long time, not for 60 years or more, I think. But it's true, sir. She's his mother. When his father, Uther Pendragon, was buried, Queen Igerne, came to this country, bringing all her treasure, and built that castle on the rock, and the rich and the beautiful hall that I've heard you describe. And I'm sure you'll have seen the other lady, too, the other queen, a great and beautiful lady, who was the wife of King Lot, and the mother of the one whom I wish every misfortune.
My mom? Wow.
Yes, it's
big
his own mother.
Dropping. Wow.
Yeah. I know Gawain well, good sir. And I've heard he's not had a mother for a good 20 years at least. So he's saying, I haven't had a mom for 20 years.
He's pulling an Obi-Wan Kenobi. Yep. Of course I know him. He's me. And I haven't had a mom in, sure. That's a weird sentence. I haven't had a mom in.
Yeah, right.
Because that implies they died, but evidently all the Knights of the Round Table's moms have been doing witchcraft on a distant island made of gold. Pretty cool. Pretty cool.
But she's his mother, sir, you may be sure. She lived with her mother and was with child. The child was the noble and beautiful girl who is my love, and it must be said, the sister of Gawain, may God bring him the deepest shame. Truly, he wouldn't escape with his head if I had the upper hand, and he was within my reach as you are now. I'd cut his head off on the spot, and his sister wouldn't stop me tearing his heart from his chest with my bare hands. I hate him so much. So this is Guillermelin saying he's going to fuck up Gawain, right?
Okay.
Upon my soul, said Sir Gawain, you don't love in the same way as I. If I loved a girl or a lady, then for her sake, I'd love and serve all her family. You're right, I agree. But when I remember how Gawain's father killed mine, I can't feel any goodwill towards him. And with his own hands, Gawain himself killed one of my closest cousins, a valiant and worthy knight. But I've never had the chance to take revenge. But do this favor for me now. Return to the castle and take this ring for my love for me. I'd have you present it to her as a gift from me.
God damn it. There's another like magic object entering the picture. Great.
And tell her I believe and trust that her love is such that she would rather her brother Gawain died a bitter death than I should hurt my smallest toe. Send my love, my greetings, and give her this ring for me, her sweetheart. Sir Gawain set the ring on his little finger and said, "Sir, by the faith I owe you, you have a wise and courteous girl for your love, a noble woman of high lineage, and fair and comely and kind-hearted, if she agrees to what you've said." And Guillermo said, "Sir, you'll be doing me a great favor, I promise you, if you take this ring as a present to my beloved, for I love her deeply, and I'll reward you for it, for I'll tell you the name of the castle as you asked. It's called the Rock of Canguin."
The Rock of Canguin. All right. Yeah.
Canguin cool. is just a made up place.
Oh, so, there sick. You go. Great. Kind of like Camelot. Sure.
Yep. Many fine, rich cloths are woven there, green and red, and many fine woolen stuffs, which are sold and bought in great quantities. Now I've told you all you wish to know, and without a word of a lie, and you've spoken well in return. Do you wish to ask me anything else? No, sir, only that I may leave. Then Garlamont said, "Before you go, sir, tell me your name."
And knights are beholden to this question.
And Sir Gawain said, "God help me, sir. My name shall never be kept from you. I am the one you hate so much. I am Gawain." You
Dang.
Are Gawain?
Da, da, da.
Yes, truly, the nephew of King Arthur. Boss music yeah. plays. In faith, then, you are very bold or very foolish to tell me your name when you know I hate you mortally. Oh, if only I had my helmet and my shield. If I were armed as you are, I'd cut off your head this instant. Nothing would stop me. But if you dare wait for me, I'll fetch my arms and return to do battle and bring three or four.
Stay right here. Okay, stay right here. I'll be right back.
And bring 3 or 4 men to witness it. Alternatively, if you wish, we'll wait for 7 days. And on the 7th, return here fully armed. And you will summon King Arthur and his queen and all their people. And I'll assemble the knights from all my kingdom. Then our battle won't be fought in secret. All who come will see it. For a battle between such worthy men as the two of us are deemed to be should not be fought without witnesses. It's only right that ladies and knights should be present. For when one of us is vanquished and everyone knows of it, the victor will have 1,000 times more honor than if he were alone.
Okay.
Yep, I guess.
Sure.
Sir, yeah. said Sir Gawain, I'd gladly do without all this if you would agree to avoid battle. For if I've done you any wrong, I'll willingly make amends acceptable to both to your friends and mine, so that all is just and fair. But Guillermo said, I can't think what justice there can be if you daren't do battle with me. I've suggested 2 courses of action. Now choose which one you like. Either wait for me here, if you dare, while I go fetch my arms, or summon all the people of your land to come here in 7 days. At Pentecost, and we just talked about that.
Yeah. Right? Yeah.
King Arthur will be holding court at Orkney, I'm told, which is only 2 days' ride from here. Your messenger could find the king and his people there, all equipped and ready. Send for him. That would be best, for a day's respite is a precious thing. And Sir Gawain replied, God save me. The court will indeed be there. You've been told quite rightly, and I swear by this hand that I'll send to him tomorrow before I sleep a wink. Gawain, he said, I'm going to take you to the finest bridge in the world. The river is very deep and swift, and no man alive could cross it or jump to the other bank. But Sir Gawain replied, yeah, I guess. I don't, that's weird.
I like how jumping is the main mode of transport for that bank, but okay, great.
Gawain replied, I'm not going to seek any ford or bridge, come what may, for the treacherous girl will think it cowardice. No, I'll keep my promise to her and go straight across. With that, he thrust in his spurs, and his horse leapt nimbly across the water, quite untroubled. When the girl, who had so misled him with her words, saw him coming towards her, she tethered her horse to the tree and came towards him on foot, and her heart and attitude had changed, for she greeted him most humbly and said she had come to plead for mercy, admitting her guilt, for she knew he had suffered greatly because of her. So now she's changed, right?
Right.
Good sir, she said, listen now, and I'll tell you why I've been so haughty towards all the knights in the world who have taken me in their company. I want to explain, if you don't mind. That knight, God damn him, who was talking to you over there, he ill bestowed his love on me, for he loved me and I hated him, because, I shan't conceal it, he caused me great pain by killing the knight who was my sweetheart. Then he thought to do me the honor of enticing me with his love, but his efforts were vain, for at the first opportunity I escaped from him and joined company with the knight from whom you took me from today. Losing him doesn't bother me at all, but ever since then...
What a girl boss. Yep. What a girl boss. She is, she knows her, like, she knows what she's looking for in this world, and she still hasn't found it yet. So you know what? These boys... these nighty boys want to fucking ice each other? Go nuts.
But his efforts were vain. For the first opportunity... oh, sorry. I've been... but ever since death robbed me of my first love, I've been mad and spoken haughtily and acted wickedly and crazily. I didn't care who I crossed. I tormented them deliberately because I wanted to find one whose temper was such that I could drive him wild with anger so that he'd cut me to pieces.
Oh, so she's like, she's a little gothy. She likes the abuse. Or is she suicidal?
I've yearned for death for a long time now.
Oh, she's suicidal. She's the other, she's the other one. Okay. Yeah. Okay. I was thinking like,
that's a
you
line
know,
for the intro, right?
No, I was thinking more like, you know, I like to be spanked. The other one. The other one's much worse. Okay.
Mete out justice now, sir. Such justice that no girl who ever hears of me will dare speak shamefully to a knight again. Dear girl, said Gawain, why should I punish you? May it never please the Son of God that you suffer any harm from me. Mount up now without delay, and we'll go to that mighty castle. The boatman's at the landing place, waiting to ferry us across. I'll do exactly as you wish, said the girl. Then she climbed into the saddle of her little palfrey with its long mane, and they rode down to the pilot, who happily ferried them over the river. The ladies and the girls, who had been lamenting bitterly for him, saw them coming. All the squires at the hall, too, had been out of their minds with grief, but now their rejoicing was the greatest ever seen. The queen was sitting, awaiting him outside the hall, and had commanded all the girls to take each other by the hand and to dance and celebrate. And so began their rejoicing to greet Sir Gawain, singing and dancing all around. And he came and dismounted in their midst. The ladies and girls and both the queens embraced him and addressed him joyfully. And with great celebration, they took the armor from his legs and arms and breast and head. The girl he had brought
all the armor. Yep. All of it. Yep. Okay.
The girl he had brought was greeted with joy as well. Everyone served her willingly, but for his sake, not for hers.
Dang. A little bit of shade coming there.
They moved on, celebrating, to the hall, and all sat down together. And Sir Gawain took his sister and seated her beside him on the bed of marvels. And whispered to her softly, young lady, I bring you a golden ring from across the river with a brilliant green emerald. A knight sends it to you as a love token with his greetings and says that you're his sweetheart. I believe him, sir, she said. But if I love him at all, it's from a distance, for he's never seen me, nor I him, except from across a river. He's sworn his love for me for a long time now, for which I thank him, Yet he's never, ever come to the castle. But he kept sending messengers to beg for my love until I granted it, I confess. But that's all the sweetheart I am to him as yet. Oh, dear girl.
He wants me for my across the river looks.
I guess, yeah, right? Gawain says, Oh, dear girl, he's already boasting that you'd rather your brother, Sir Gawain, were dead than he had hurt his toe. What? Sir, I'm amazed he could have said such a foolish thing. By God, I never thought he was so ill-mannered. He's made a great mistake in sending such a message. Alas, my brother doesn't even know I'm born, and he has never seen me. Guillaume Melant's quite wrong, for by my soul, I wouldn't have my brother harmed any more than myself. While they were talking together and the ladies were waiting for them, the white-haired queen said to the other queen seated beside her, "My dear, what do you make of the lord sitting next to your daughter, my granddaughter? He's been whispering her to her for a long while. I don't know what he's saying, but I'm delighted, as we both should be, for it's a mark of great nobility that he's drawn to the fairest and wisest in the hall."
Let me get this straight. They're sitting, they're still in a grand hall.
Yep.
And they're seated on a bed in the middle of the room.
The bed of marbles. The bed of marbles.
And just everyone around them is just sitting and staring at them. Because it really doesn't seem like these two.
There's no TV, Jan. There's no Instagram. Yeah.
These queens are probably in earshot. Yeah, right? Yeah. Like
I'm picturing it.
It's weird.
There's like 500 windows in this motherfucker.
Yeah. It's drafty up in there.
Jesus.
Okay. So they're noting that they're getting flirty on a bed or just,
Yeah. It's his sister, right?
So,
This is the younger queen, who's his mom. Okay. Says, I wish to God he would marry her, and that she was so pleasing to him as Lavina to Aeneas, right? Which is like a Tristan and Isolde, like an old school doomed lovers thing, which is kind of ironic. Yeah, anyway.
It would be an old school thing for a mom to want incest.
Not if you're royalty. Well, if you are royalty, then it totally makes sense.
Yeah, which is cool.
Oh, lady, said the other queen, may God so incline his heart that they may be like brother and sister, that he may love her so dearly, and she him, that they may be as one flesh.
Okay. One flesh, one blood, one last name.
Yeah, the lady meant by her prayer that Gawain should love her and take her for his wife. She had not recognized her son. They would indeed be like brother and sister, for there would be no other kind of love between them once they knew how they were related, and their mother would not rejoice for the reason she imagined.
Okay. So at least they're acknowledging that this is funny, right? This is Star Wars. This is the Leia Luke kiss, right?
It's funny because they're related. Or Oedipal, could be tragic, you know, but
yeah,
interesting. Sir Gawain spoke with his beautiful sister for a long time. Word choice. Then he turned and called to a boy at his right hand, the one whom seemed the most worthy and diligent and willing, and the brightest and most able of all the squires in the hall, Master Squire. Then he went down to a chamber, taking only the boy with him. When they reached there, Sir Gawain said, "You seem to be a worthy soul, boy, and bright and clever. I'm going to tell you a secret."
Oh, God, this is going there. I don't like none of this.
You'll profit greatly if you do.
Oh, God damn it.
I'm going to send you to a place where you'll be received with joy.
Oh, God. I don't like the way you're reading this. I don't like any of this situation.
Sir, may my tongue be torn from my mouth before a single word that you want hidden crosses my lips. Then, brother, said Sir Gawain, you're to go to my lord King Arthur, for I am his nephew Gawain. The way is neither long nor hard, for the king has set up court for Pentecost at the city of Orkney. But if the journey costs you dear, you'll be repaid by me. When you come before the king, you'll find him in low spirits. But when you give him my greetings, he'll be filled with joy. Everyone at the court will be happy when they hear you bring new no, when they hear you bring news from me.
What a little drama queen. Yeah, totally. No, they're going to be in a bad mood. They'll be in a bad mood.
Yeah, totally.
Mention right? my name. Just watch. Everyone's faces so gonna pop up. Yeah.
You're to tell the king that by the faith he owes me, since he's my lord and I'm his vassal, he mustn't fail on any account to appear before me encamped in the meadow below this tower on the fifth day of Pentecost. And he's to bring all the company that's gathered at his court, nobility and common folk alike. For I'm committed to battle with a knight who respects neither me nor the king. He thinks him a man of little worth. The knight is Guillermo Melant, who hates him mortally. You're to tell the queen, too, that she must come by the great faith there should be between us, since she's my lady and my friend. And when she hears the news, she won't fail for my sake to bring all the girls and ladies who are at court that day. But one thing worries me. Have you a good hunting horse to carry you there swiftly? The boy replied that there was a fine one, big, fast, and strong, that he could take for his use. Excellent, said Sir Gawain. The boy took him quickly down to the stables and led out some strong, well-rested hunting horses, one of which was ready to ride, for he had had it newly shod, and it lacked neither saddle nor bridle.
So it was dressed and ready to go.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay, sure.
Yeah. Souped up, good to go. Gas in the tank. Yeah.
Oh, this one we feed.
Right. In faith, boy, said Sir Gawain, you're well equipped. Go now, and may the Lord of all kings give you a good journey there and back and guide you on the right path. So he sent the boy on his way and led him down to the river, where he told the pilot to ferry him across. He did so, and it would not tire him, for he had a good number of oarsmen. And so the boy crossed the river and was soon on the right road for the city of Arkenny. Anyone with the wit to ask the way can travel anywhere in the world. And that's the narrator just telling you there.
Sure. Yeah. Yep.
And that's not true. Most of the time, they'll rob you. Meanwhile, Sir Gawain returned to the hall, where he passed the time in great joy and pleasure, for everyone loved and served him. The queen had baths of hot water prepared in 500 vats and bade all the squires go in to wash and bathe. So she's got 500 tubs, dude.
They really 500 can't. Tubs. Everything in this place is 500.
Yeah.
Everything. Mm-hmm. They don't skimp on nothing. How many people does it take to fill 500 bathtubs?
I can't even imagine. That's so many bathtubs, dude.
Yeah. Thank God there's a window for each one.
I was in an apartment building that was giant and spanned two blocks, and that had 630 apartments. So possibly 600 tubs there. Yeah, excluding some of the, you know.
I'm not picturing a multi-floor thing. This is like one big hall.
I guess. I don't know. I mean, you had bathhouses. Those were incredibly popular in the medieval ages, you know.
I'm sure. So. That's an easy one. You just heat up water. That's a good time. That's a good time
no matter what.
That's a like, good time now. Yeah. Right. Like, yeah. Yeah. So,
and, you know, I mean, the Romans loved baths and they were leftovers, you know, some of them had healing properties, and it's kind of true. Like some of the waters had a bunch of minerals and stuff.
Sure. That
people probably didn't get in their diet very regularly. So, but people, you know, if you're doing rural work, most places are right by rivers and stuff like that. Baths were popular, and they were also whorehouses, you know, at points. They were widely prohibited by religious people. But the more religious laws you have against it, the more likely it was that they were super common. You
know? No, so, some things never change.
Right. Yeah. When industrialization happens, bathing changes quite a bit. You know, and people don't bathe as often.
It seems like it's almost a novelty in this story. It seems like it's like a thing you mention alongside like a guy with a silver prosthetic. Like it's as novel and like outside of the norm as that.
Yeah. But there is this like idea that people in the medieval ages never bathed. They bathe a lot more than when cities started to become popular.
Yeah, I'm sure the first cities were shit shows.
You know, water was just more precious. And so, and there wasn't as many clear ways to get it. So it was like from a pump and that kind of stuff. And so, you know, it was just much harder to collect as much water. And then not only that, but people would like reuse bath water and shit like that. So it's really weird. Yeah, it's gross. If you were the youngest, you were like the last in line.
Where the term don't throw the baby out with the bathwater comes from. Yeah.
100%. Yeah. Robes specially made for them were ready when they left the baths. The cloth was woven with golden thread, and the lining was of ermine. Then the squires spent all night in the chapel until after matins, which is morning prayers, standing all the while, never kneeling. And in the morning, Sir Gawain, with his own hands, fastened the right spur on each of them and girded on their swords and dubbed them. He now had a company of fully 500 new knights.
Holy shit. So he just, whoa. yeah. He just became a goddamn general? He just
bro. He leveled up
put
like
on
a
belt and then turned around and there were 500 dudes.
No, he fastened on each of them. Spurs and their swords. He made them knights.
Wow. So he's like, it's a whole montage sequence of him walking around like, okay, cool. Sick.
Yeah, right? Yeah. So meanwhile, the boy had reached the city of Orkhen, where the king was holding a court befitting such a high feast day. The crippled and the sick, watching the boy ride, said, "He's come on urgent business. I think he's brought some news or message to the court from afar. Whatever his news may be, he'll find the king deaf and dumb. He's so full of grief and anguish, and who'll be able to counsel him when he's heard what the messenger has to say?" "Go on with you," said others. "What are you doing prattling on about the king's business? You should be dismayed and distraught that we've lost the one who defended us all in the name of God and brought us great good out of love and charity." Throughout the city, the poor people lamented so for Sir Gawain, whom they dearly loved. The boy rode on until he found the king sitting in his hall with 100 counts palatine, which is a rank I found. Because I was like,
okay,
Palpatine?
Yeah. Yeah, but, I mean, counts already. Yeah. I'm like, wait,
oh,
what?
Yeah. Okay, so it doesn't mean much in this day, but it probably means more in the day that this is written. Even then, like in medieval ages, there was like kings was really important. And then there was like a rank below them, which would be sometimes it's aldermen, sometimes it's counts, right? Then below that didn't really matter. Like it all got parceled out and people were sir or vassals. Like that's a common thing. They could be a knight, but that's only if they were like military service. Mm. But even if you weren't a knight, let's say you were, you know, like, I don't know, somebody who wasn't a knight, but you were a vassal, like, You could still get people to fight for you, you know, like you could be a very feared individual is what I'm trying to go for, right?
Sure. Yeah.
And could bring a lot of people to the battlefield, or a lot of things to the battlefield that are good for killing people, right? Like, you know. So anyway, let's see. 100 counts palatine and 100 kings and 100 dukes seated around him.
Jesus Christ. So he's got the UN there.
Yeah, he's got 1, 2, 3, 100 counts palatines, so that's 100. 100 kings, so that's 200. And 100 dukes, so 300.
This royalty. This has gone from a first person like RPG to a like Civ style map based game.
It's final episode, dude.
Yeah, sure. The story is evolving along with the body count.
Mm-hmm. The king was deep in mournful thought, seeing the great host of nobility, but no sign of his nephew. His distress was such that he fainted and fell. The first to reach him and help him up was certainly not slow, for everyone rushed to his aid. The Lady Loras was sitting in a gallery and saw the grief that had stricken the hall. She ran down from the gallery. We have no idea who she is, by the way. She's randomly.
I was like, who is this? Yeah.
She ran down from the gallery and came in dismay to the queen. When the queen saw her, she asked her what was wrong.
Which queen? We have so many queens here. There's at least two. A third that I suspect, but...
Yep.
Go on.
That's it.
Wait.
That's the story, Jan. At this point, Percival probably died.
Wait.
And the story is unfinished.
No, you did not. You did not do this.
There's
no.
nothing. There's nothing left, Jan. Like, I'm sorry.
I was like,
no,
okay.
Welcome to history, bitch.
I thought, you know, I was just letting you prep for the next thing. Okay. Oh, man.
No, that's not.
No. Uh-huh. Go back. Save the last, like, give me the last 30 seconds again.
Yeah, sure. Uh-huh. No problem. Let's go. Beep, 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 beep. Throughout the city, the poor people lamented so for Sir Gawain, whom they dearly loved. The boy rode on until he found the king sitting in his hall, with 100 counts palatine and 100 kings and 100 dukes seated around him. The king was deep in mournful thought, seeing the great host of nobility, but no sign of his nephew. His distress was such that he fainted and fell. The first to reach him and help him up was certainly not slow, for everyone rushed to his aid. The Lady Loris was sitting in the gallery and saw the grief that had stricken the hall. She ran down from the gallery and came in dismay to the queen. When the queen saw her, she asked her what was wrong.
And that's where it ends?
That's
oh, it. Wow. Before I get into the numerous questions,
yeah, of course.
Let me just make 100% sure where we have left off.
Uh-huh.
So the boy that Gawain or Gawain has told to go talk to King Arthur, tell him that fucking Gawain sends word, and to come
Guillermo
over here,
because
I've got this fucking thing going. Also, remember Percival and the fucking Holy Grail?
Yep.
Remember that? We're just gonna not even mention that.
Nope.
So
you died
so
before.
The
presumably
boy,
you died. We don't know for sure, but
the boy lands at the place that they were at for the religious bit of business.
Mm-hmm.
And there's all sorts of dudes there, and of course the king's in such bad spirits that he faints, and then the queen comes out, and that's about where it ends.
Yep, nailed it. Yeah, the king
How?
Is sad that he hasn't seen Gawain, right?
Yes.
His nephew. Yeah, you
so
know
the
it.
news is going to cheer him up. Great.
Yep.
Now, before I just begin on my tirade,
mm-hmm.
why is it unfinished?
Okay, so again, like, and we are we might, depends how long I want to do this, but it could be its own little episode, but I'll say this just to wrap it up in a bow, right? Very presumably he died. Right?
Oh, wow.
So he was mid writing
this.
So he was
mid. Wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
This is his longest work by far. You know, writing was becoming popular, and this guy was definitely good at it. But you know, in terms of his original works, which do survive because a lot of Troia was preserved, the writings from Troia, or the city, it's remained surprisingly stable, right?
Sure.
And there was a huge boon in literacy of that place. So, but yeah, in short, he kicked the bucket at some point around this, we think. And there are, and you'll be happy here, the translation by Nigel Bryant, people love this story and wrote endings. Yeah, go ahead.
I think one of my cats is just going nuts. Can you hear it?
Nope.
Okay, just making sure.
Yeah.
Because, she's going nuts.
Yeah.
Yeah, all right.
Yeah, so you'll be happy to know, Jan, that there are continuations to the story.
Whoa, okay. Did they bring him back from the dead?
Well, they wrote the endings, and all of them start from that line that...
Okay, so there's like fan fiction out there.
There is fan fiction out there. And how? Some of them are okay. Much more recent than you would think, too. Like stepping into some of the more famous ones.
Oh, I'm gonna write my own ending right now.
Yeah. Oh, boy, you absolutely could. Howdy. Yeah.
You better fucking believe it. But when was the oldest completion?
Ooh, I'd have to look into that. The one that is mentioned here, I can give you some information. Give me a second here. Yeah, so it says Chrétien himself died with personal unfinished, as Garbet and Montreux testifies. So that's how we know somewhat. The theme of Chrétien's last work, however, was too good to leave, and quite apart from the separate works that it inspired, Chrétien's own poem was taken up by no fewer than four continuators, who carried on the story over a period of some 40 years. The first continuation is completely anonymous. The authorship of the second is hard to attribute, since at the point where the writer identifies himself, none of the scribes of the extant manuscripts could agree on a spelling or even a version of the name. Only the last two are properly attributable. The writer of the third continuation identifies himself at the very end as Manassier. And there is another continuation which appears in the manuscript as a long interpolation between the second and the third, written by a man who announces himself as Gerbert.
Okay. So over the course of 40 years afterward,
at least four people
tried to finish it.
Yeah.
And, we have that, I imagine.
Yeah. I've got them right in front of me.
That's our next swing of the, I hate to say it. Yeah. I need to know. I don't even begin to give a shit if it's not Troya. As far as I'm concerned, I need something. Bro, we just the catcher and the ride it? No, you can't.
We sopranoed it. Dude, yeah, that's exactly what we did.
Bro, yeah. And,
I don't know. There's some medieval works that just die like that, man. But I love the human spirit that people are like, they're with you, Jan. Like, I think honestly, had this happened, and you know, you would have been pissed enough to write an ending.
I'm like,
invested now. Jesus Christ.
I mean, it ends with the death match. Between it's so yeah. obvious now. It yeah, ends with right? Gawain.
Yeah, totally.
Gawain
right? yeah.
going uh-huh. up against Percival. Like
right.
to me,
he's got an army,
is,
dude. Right?
Yeah. Exactly. And Percival gets the Grail and is now able to take down Gawain with the. That's my version. My version is you smash the two stories at the very end, and then I don't know from there, but. Just what an interesting thing that life and death is, because it's fascinating that the story ends like that because of nature, just the course of nature.
And here, let me make sure there's no spoilers here, hold on one second. In the introduction here, it's written, and this is Nigel Bryant. It's not hard to see why Chrétien's unfinished story of the Grail proves such a compelling one, for its fundamental theme could hardly have been bolder, clearer, more movingly simple, or more important to its medieval audience. It's about the making of a knight, in the most complete sense. It's not by chance that the story begins with the boy who has been brought up in a remote forest with no knowledge whatsoever of the world of knighthood.
Except for crossbow distances. Yeah. But...
the haziest understanding of matters religious. He does not even know what a church is, let alone a knight's hauberk, shield, or lance. Chrétien's plan is so forthright and sweeping that he sets out to depict a knight's development from a point of total innocence and ignorance. And there's comedy there. That's one of the points that I'll bring up, is I think a lot of this is meant to be, you watched the Fallout series, right?
Sure.
Okay. So think of those knights and how we depict them. Right.
Okay.
Like the Brotherhood of Steel Knights.
Yeah, sure. They're all kind of assholes. They're all
and they're all
arrogant.
Idiots.
Yeah,
yeah
sure.
right like and so our protagonist is made bolder by the fact that, you know, like he's kind of ignorant of their ways or does whatever the fuck he wants, you know.
So
It's
this is a
similar,
comedy.
I think, in some ways. Yes.
Wow.
And it can
Okay.
definitely be read that way. I think medieval
I
audiences would
think
have been
they
a little
forgot a
more
joke
cued
or
into it.
two. I think they forgot a little bit of the laughs, the
I
yucks,
mean, there's
the
a
funny.
generation gap too, for
Yeah,
sure. You know, like
fair,
boomer
fair.
humor isn't
But
funny to us now, you know, so.
ah, fuck, man. I don't know. I could still watch. I could still watch fucking the Three Amigos and be very entertained.
Yeah, that's definitely true. So,
Wow, what a journey, Marcel. That's knowing that we were literally like we were driving at 72 miles an hour
yeah, man.
straight toward a dead end, just a cliff. Just
Oh.
we were driving, we were just oh, just cruising speeds and just cliff.
I wanted to take you there, man. I wanted you to feel lost.
yeah.
You know?
I feel it.
Yeah.
I
The loss
can't
of
wait.
history. And there's information rot, you know? Like this just happens, man. Like you know what's funny is it does there's a modern parallel to this too. The Wheel of Time series, Robert Jordan.
Yeah, sure. Didn't
He died, and Brandon Sanderson, I think Brandon or Brian, what's the name?
the same thing happen with the Dune series? At some point, Frank died and
Brandon Sanderson. Yeah. Yeah. But go ahead.
oh, I thought the same thing happened with Dune.
Yeah.
That, yeah, mid like storyline, he died and his son took it up or something. Yeah.
That's 100% right. Yeah. So, you know, there it's happened a couple of times, you know, where a series just needs to get finished and people are just not happy leaving it where it left, right? You know, people are afraid of that with George R. R. Martin, right? Like,
Yeah,
yeah.
sure, right? Yeah.
So,
Well,
well, yeah.
incredible, Marcel.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you for the journey. You know, I had a lot of ways that it could have ended, but not that one. Let me tell you.
That's
I was sitting there looking at the time because I was like, you had said this is our last one.
yeah.
I'm like, we've got a shoehorn Percival Peck into this. And the fucking Holy Grail? How the fuck is
There's a third
that
option, John.
happen? There's always the it just
Yeah,
heads
the
option.
universe collides. Yeah. It's That's it, man. That's how it is for us. The narrative just ends. Oh, yeah. On that
And
note.
yeah, and like that, goodbye, internet. Goodbye, lovers of medieval stories that end abruptly because of death.
I'm going to cut that off like one sentence before.
Yeah,
Just
for
right in the
sure.
middle.